Welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're going to try something a little different. It's a think and act locally kind of approach.
I like it.
Yeah, and we're getting this from the free ebooks that Tom Woods offers on his site.
Tom Woods.
Yeah, tomsfreebooks.com. And he's got this interesting idea.
Okay.
If you think the American establishment is doing a fantastic job, has the American people's best interest at heart, well,
Yeah.
these books aren't for you.
So he's challenging the status quo.
Yeah, he's encouraging people to really question how things work.
I like that.
And I mean, Tom Woods, he's no slouch. He's a New York Times bestselling author.
Wow.
And he even got the Hayek Lifetime Achievement Award back in 2019.
So he's got some serious credibility.
Yeah, so we're in good hands.
Okay, so which ebook are we diving into today?
Well, we're going to be tackling our enemy, the Fed.
Interesting choice.
Yeah, it takes a critical look at the Federal Reserve, and its impact on the U.S. economy, its history.
Okay.
It's kind of like, most people see the Fed as this all-powerful entity that keeps our economy stable, prevents financial meltdowns,
Nice.
like they save the day.
It's almost like a revered institution, shrouded in this mystery and complexity.
Exactly. But Woods argues that this whole image of the Fed as this benevolent protector,
Right.
it's a myth, a
Really?
carefully constructed myth. He claims the Fed is actually the source of a lot of our economic woes.
Wow, that's a bold statement.
Yeah, he says that it's devalued the dollar and
Yeah.
that it acts more like a central planning agency than a champion of free markets.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What evidence does he present to support this? This is a pretty controversial view.
Well, he starts by challenging that conventional narrative about the Fed's role in stabilizing the economy. We're always told that before the Fed, the U.S. economy was a chaotic roller coaster,
Oh, yeah.
prone to these wild swings and frequent
Like
panics.
the Wild West of finance.
Exactly. But Woods, he actually cites research from Christina Romer.
Romer.
Yeah, Obama's own economic advisor.
Yeah. Okay, so not exactly a fringe figure.
Right. And she found that the data that's often used to paint this picture of the pre-Fed economy as wildly unstable,
Yeah.
it was exaggerated, especially when it came to like the severity of economic downturns.
So the picture wasn't as bleak as we've been led to believe.
Apparently not. And even if we just focus on the post-World War II period, the supposed golden age of Fed-managed stability,
Right.
the evidence is still shaky.
Really?
Yeah, Woods points to an economist named George Selgin,
Okay.
and he argues that while economic contractions might have been a little more frequent before the Fed, they were also much shorter in
Interesting.
recovery. They were faster.
So it's not as simple as saying the Fed came in, brought stability, and everything was smooth sailing from then on.
Not according to Woods.
Okay.
He then dives into some specific historical examples to illustrate his point.
Oh, good.
Yeah, like he tackles the Panic of 1819, which is often cited as proof that we needed a central bank to prevent financial chaos.
That's a common argument, yeah. Without a central bank to steer the ship, we're all doomed.
Exactly. But Woods turns that whole narrative on its head.
Really? How so?
He argues that the Panic of 1819 wasn't caused by a lack of central banking, but by excessive credit creation and inflation that was fueled by banks.
Thanks.
Yeah, including the Second Bank of the United States.
So even with a semi-central bank, like the second bank, there
Yeah.
are still problems.
It was like a classic case of too much easy money flooding the system,
Oh.
leading to speculation and a boom and then the inevitable bust.
Sounds familiar.
Right. It's like we haven't learned from history.
Yeah.
And what's fascinating is that the Panic of 1819 actually shaped the views of figures like Thomas Jefferson, who saw it as this clear demonstration of the dangers of inflationary policies and a centralized banking system.
So this event was a turning point in how some people viewed the role of government in the economy.
Yeah, you could say that. Now, speaking of historical events that have been reinterpreted,
Okay.
let's talk about the so-called Long Depression.
The one that supposedly followed the Panic of 1873.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Another supposed example of the chaos that happens without a central bank to guide us.
Right.
What
But
else was?
Woods points to modern research
Okay.
that reveals this period wasn't actually a depression. The data show significant economic growth during this time.
Wait, so if it wasn't a depression, why was it labeled as such?
Well, it seems that historians were misled by falling consumer prices,
Oh, that fear of deflation.
which we often associate with economic hardship.
Yeah, and that's something we'll see Woods challenge later on as well.
Yes, he does. For now, the key takeaway is that the historical evidence used to justify the need for a central bank
Yeah.
might not be as solid as we think.
And you know what I find fascinating?
What's that?
Woods doesn't just criticize the Fed. He offers like an alternative vision.
Oh.
A different way to think about money and banking.
I'm all yours. Let's hear it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to get into that, but first, yeah, we got to take a quick break.
Okay, sounds good. All right, so we're back, and we were just talking about Woods' alternative vision for money and banking.
Yeah, and I'm really curious to hear more about it.
Well, he starts by challenging this idea that the Fed was necessary to stabilize the U.S. economy.
Okay.
He actually argues that the structure of the U.S. banking system before the Fed made it more prone to panics.
Really? I always thought it was the absence of a central bank that caused all the trouble.
Right, that's what we're often told. But Woods points to the system of unit banking that was in place for much of the 19th century.
Unit banking.
Yeah, basically banks were prohibited from having branches.
Oh, okay.
So you had all these small independent banks tied to their local communities.
I see. So if one local economy takes a hit, the bank goes down with it.
Exactly. It made the whole system incredibly fragile. A downturn in one area could trigger a domino effect, and you'd have widespread bank failures.
Okay, so how does that tie into the argument that the Fed is necessary to prevent panics?
Well, Woods contends that it was this structural weakness of unit banking, not just the lack of a central bank, that contributed to the frequency and severity of panics in the pre-Fed era. Hmm. And to illustrate his point, he brings up the example of Canada.
Canada.
Yeah. Canada also had fractional reserve banking, you know, where banks only hold a fraction of their deposits in reserve.
Right.
But Canada didn't have these restrictive unit banking laws.
So Canadian banks could have branches and diversify their operations.
Yes. And guess what? They managed to avoid those major banking panics that plagued the U.S. during the same period. And they did it all without a central bank.
Wow. That's really interesting. It makes you wonder if the U.S. could have achieved similar stability without the Fed if it had adopted a different banking structure.
It's definitely something to consider. And Woods also points out that even after the Fed was established, banking panics continued in the U.S.
Until deposit insurance was introduced in 1934.
Exactly. The FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation.
Right, which basically guarantees that people won't lose their savings if a bank fails.
Right. So it wasn't just the Fed that ultimately stabilized the banking system, but the introduction of deposit insurance.
Okay. But what about the argument that the Fed has helped to prevent financial crises on a global scale?
Well, Woods actually challenges that notion, too.
He does.
He argues that global banking crises have actually been more frequent and severe in the era of central banking.
Really?
He cites research showing that since the establishment of major central banks like the Federal Reserve, the number of banking crises worldwide has increased significantly.
That's concerning.
And the losses associated with those crises, they've also grown larger.
So the narrative we've been given about the Fed as this guardian of global financial stability might need some rethinking.
It's definitely a different perspective than what we usually hear. And that's what I appreciate about Woods's work. He encourages us to question these assumptions and examine the evidence for ourselves.
So we've seen how Woods challenges the idea that the Fed brought stability to the economy. But what about inflation? That's one of the biggest concerns people have about the Fed rate.
Absolutely. And Woods really digs into this issue. He argues that inflation isn't just about prices going up. It's a mechanism that redistributes wealth.
Wait, how does inflation redistribute wealth? I always thought it just meant everything gets more expensive.
That's the surface level impact, but there's a deeper process at work. When the Fed creates new money, it doesn't distribute it evenly across the economy.
So where does this new money go first?
It goes to the institutions that are closest to the money creation process, like big banks and government contractors.
They get access to this newly created money before everyone else.
Exactly. And that gives them a huge advantage. They can use this new money to buy assets, invest in projects, or simply bid up prices before the inflationary effects have rippled through the economy.
So by the time that new money reaches the average person, prices have already gone up, eroding their purchasing power. It's like a hidden tax.
That's a great way to put it. Inflation is a stealthy way of transferring wealth from those who hold money to those who have access to newly created money.
And Woods argues that this power to create money out of thin air gives the government tremendous power over the economy.
He does. He points out that inflation allows the government to fund itself without having to raise taxes or take on more debt.
It's like a way of quietly siphoning resources from the public without their consent.
Exactly. And that's why Woods is so critical of fiat money systems, where the government has the ability to manipulate the currency at will,
He believes that power inevitably leads to abuse.
He does. He argues that it undermines economic freedom.
So inflation isn't just an economic problem, it's a political problem as well.
That's Wiz's contention. He sees inflation as a tool that empowers the state and erodes the purchasing power of the average citizen.
And he's saying this power to create money out of thin air is at the heart of many of our economic problems.
That's his argument.
This is all pretty eye-opening. It's really making me rethink my whole understanding of how money works and the role of government in the economy.
It's a complex issue, and Woods doesn't shy away from challenging conventional wisdom. But that's what makes his work so valuable. He forces us to think critically and question assumptions we might have taken for granted.
Okay, so we've talked about how Woods challenges the Fed's role in stabilizing the economy and the dangers of inflation. What other arguments does he make against the Fed?
Well, he tackles a very common belief that a growing economy needs an expanding money supply.
Right, that's what we're always told. More money equals more economic activity.
That's the mainstream view. But Woods debunks it quite effectively. He explains that any amount of money can facilitate any level of economic activity.
Wait, how is that possible?
Prices can adjust to reflect changes in the supply of goods and services. There is no inherent need for the government to constantly increase the money supply to keep the economy growing.
So if the government wasn't constantly pumping new money into the system, what would happen?
Woods argues that in a free market with a stable money supply, we might actually see falling prices over time.
Falling prices? Isn't that deflation? And isn't deflation supposed to be a bad thing?
That's what we've been conditioned to believe. But Woods presents a very different perspective on deflation. He argues that it's not the bogeyman we've been led to believe, and in fact, it can have several benefits.
Okay, now I'm really intrigued. Tell me more about this positive side of deflation.
Well, Woods says we need to understand that there are different types of deflation.
Okay.
One type is driven by increased productivity and abundance.
So basically, businesses are getting better at producing more goods and services with fewer resources.
Exactly. And as a result, prices naturally fall. But here's the key. This kind of deflation is actually beneficial for consumers.
Because they're getting more bang for their buck.
Precisely. Their purchasing power increases, their standard of living improves. Now, of course, there's another type of deflation that's driven by a collapse in demand.
Like during a recession, when people are afraid to spend money.
Right. And that kind of deflation can be problematic. But Woods argues that even in those situations, deflation isn't necessarily the root cause of the problem. It's more of a symptom of some underlying economic imbalances.
So if deflation isn't always bad, why are governments and central banks so obsessed with preventing it?
That's a great question. And Woods offers a rather provocative answer. He suggests that those in power, the government and the financial elite, they actually benefit from inflation and are threatened by deflation.
Now, why would that be?
Well, think about it. Governments are almost always in debt, right?
Yeah.
And inflation erodes the value of that debt. It makes it easier for them to repay their obligations with cheaper dollars.
Ah, so inflation is like a hidden tax on everyone who holds money while benefiting those who owe money.
Exactly. And who else benefits from inflation? Highly leveraged financial institutions. Mm. They borrow heavily at low interest rates and invest in assets that they expect to rise in value. Inflation helps to inflate those asset prices, boosting their profits.
So they have a vested interest in keeping inflation going.
It would seem that way. And deflation, well, deflation throws a wrench in their whole game.
How so?
It makes debt more burdensome and it can lead to asset price declines, which hurts their bottom line.
So it's no wonder that the powers that be are so terrified of deflation.
Right.
It's like they're rigging the system in their favor.
That's a strong way to put it. But that's the essence of Woods's argument. He's suggesting that the current monetary system is designed to benefit a select few at the expense of the many.
This is all pretty heavy stuff. But I have to admit, it's fascinating to see how money and central banking are intertwined with these issues of power and control.
It really is. And Woods doesn't just critique the existing system. He also offers an alternative vision based on sound money and free market principles.
So what a sound money system look like?
Well, Woods argues that a sound money system is one where the government can't manipulate the currency at will. He advocates for a return to a gold standard or a similar system that limits the power of central banks to create money out of thin air.
But wouldn't that restrict the government's ability to manage the economy?
That's the trade-off, right? Woods argues that the short-term benefits of government intervention come at the expense of long-term stability and economic freedom.
Mm.
He believes that a sound money system would create a more stable and predictable economic environment that benefits everyone, not just the politically connected.
That's a pretty radical idea.
Yeah.
But I can see how it would appeal to those who are skeptical of government power and believe in the efficiency of free markets.
It definitely aligns with the libertarian philosophy, and Woods doesn't shy away from that. He's a staunch advocate for limited government and individual liberty.
So we've covered a lot of ground here. We talked about historical examples, the dangers of inflation, the myths surrounding deflation, and Woods' vision for a sound money system. Is there anything else you'd like to highlight from this ebook?
I think it's worth mentioning how Woods applies the Austrian business cycle theory to explain the housing bubble and the 2008 financial crisis.
Oh, right. I remember you mentioning the Austrian theory earlier. Can you remind me what it's all about?
Sure. In a nutshell, the Austrian theory argues that central bank intervention in the money supply and interest rates is what drives those boom and bust cycles we see in the economy.
So it's not just like irrational exuberance or market speculation that causes these crises.
The Austrians believe that those factors might play a role, but the root cause is the manipulation of money and credit by central banks.
So how did this theory apply to the housing bubble?
Well, Woods argues that the Fed's easy money policies in the early 2000s artificially lowered interest rates, which made it much easier for people to borrow money and buy homes.
There's a lot of cheap credit sloshing around the system.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that fueled the housing bubble. People were buying homes they couldn't really afford, prices were skyrocketing, and the whole thing was built on a foundation of unsustainable debt.
And when the bubble burst,
the whole house of cards came tumbling down. Banks failed, people lost their homes, and the global economy went into a tailspin.
And Woods argues that this could have been prevented if the Fed hadn't intervened in the first place.
That's the Austrian perspective. They believe that if interest rates had been allowed to rise naturally, it would have curbed excessive borrowing and prevented the bubble from inflating to such dangerous proportions.
It's a sobering thought. It makes you wonder if those in charge are really learning from these crises, or if they're just doomed to repeat the same mistakes over and over again.
That's a question that Woods grapples with throughout his work. He's critical of the current system, but he's also optimistic about the power of ideas to change the world.
He's calling for a paradigm shift, a fundamental rethinking of how we approach money and banking.
And he believes that this shift is essential if we want to create a more just and prosperous society.
Well, this deep dive into our enemy, the Fed, has certainly been enlightening. It's challenged my assumptions about the role of the Federal Reserve and the nature of money itself.
It's a powerful reminder that we shouldn't take anything for granted, especially when it comes to complex systems like the economy.
Woods encourages us to think critically, question the narratives we've been given, and seek out alternative perspectives. And that's what the deep dive is all about.
Absolutely. And if you're interested in exploring these ideas further, be sure to check out the free ebooks on tomsfreebooks.com. There's a wealth of knowledge there waiting to be discovered.
That's a wrap for today's deep dive. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next time with another thought-provoking exploration.
See you then.